This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.
Welcome to Age is an Icon. I'm Mike Crisolago, and I'm here with
Gina Bucci.
You always call yourself the sidekick, but
today, this time
you were the hero.
Yeah, I was the hero.
Yeah.
That's true.
And I was like the poor sap tied to the tracks, needed to be saved. You were the one who came in and swooped in and saved me.
Well, I mean, Mike wasn't feeling well. Like, he wrote some questions, and I went to go interview George Strombolopoulos for the new audiobook from Audible called Neverending Present. So tell us about it, Mike.
Yeah, well, basically, we George Strombolopoulos, everybody knows, a very famous broadcaster, interviewer, talk show host.
Strombo.
He's narrating the audiobook Neverending Present, mm-hmm, by Michael Barclay, the story of the tragically hip. And we had been scheduled to go to his home to interview him. And the morning of, I was not feeling very good at all. I came to work. We decided, you know what? I'm just not feeling great. Gina, can you do it on your
Mike
own?
Mike didn't look his beautiful, fresh self.
And you, like,
so
you,
I stepped up.
I had prepared the questions. You were not prepared to interview, but you did it anyway. And from what I hear, you did an amazing job. So we kind of tag teamed it.
Right. I also, I know a lot about the hip
of
as
course,
well, being a fan myself. And I know George a little bit too. So, yeah, no, I felt very comfortable doing it. It was fine. The audience may hear me reading a little bit, but I do try and make some of the questions my own.
Yeah.
But it was great.
Yeah. So, I mean, the book itself is the first sort of biography of the Tragically Hip. It's not with the participation of the band. They're notoriously sort of media shy. But this is a big deal. Strombo, obviously, a huge hip fan, close to Gord Downie. He even had the big Hip 30 celebration, the 30th anniversary celebration of the hip that he organized for his show. And I believe it was New Year's Day 2017. We had a whole bunch of great Canadian bands, Blue Rodeo, Bare Naked Ladies, Sarah Harmer, cover hip tunes. And so he's a great...
Yeah, we talk about that. He did that at his house. Yeah.
Right, yeah. And he's a great choice to narrate this audiobook. What was it like for you to go to his house and sit down with him at his home to talk about this?
He has a lovely home. And then he made me the best vegan cheeseburger I've ever had. It was incredible, actually.
There's so many oxymorons in that.
I know.
Vegan burger, vegan cheese. I mean,
Everything was vegan. And George kept saying, it bleeds. I'm like, what is he talking about? But it does look like it bleeds. I don't know what's in there, to be honest. It just tasted fantastic. It was nice and light. I didn't feel bogged down. It was excellent.
So George had you over, did the interview, and then cooks you lunch.
Yeah, and then cooks me lunch.
That's
He's
incredible.
The best.
I've never had that happen before.
I know. I should have that happen more often.
I should bring you more often, too. Maybe I would get some lunches. You're probably... they take a liking to you, and I'll just...
I think he was making lunch for people anyways, because he had a few people around there anyway, so...
Don't sell yourself short. You're very personable.
Thanks, Mike. And, you know what? Speaking of personable, you guys can get to know us even better by listening to all of our shows. And now we are available on a whole bunch of different platforms, Mike. It's very exciting.
I know.
Not only do we have our own dedicated page on everythingzoomer.com, look for mm-hmm. Ages and Icons, we're also available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. And am I forgetting anything? No, but if I am, I will fill you in again next week.
And you can check it out, everythingzoomer.com. I'll have all the details.
The David Sedaris podcast, which is doing very well. And that's where we unveiled the show on different platforms. We're like, now's a great time to expand.
Absolutely. We're moving up in the world.
Moving on up to the east side, where our podcasts get to live on different platforms. Yeah.
And from Gina's acapella to some more great music, let's go to your interview, Gina. Your one-on-one with George Strombolopoulos talking Neverending Present.
Okay, here we go. Okay, well, welcome to the Ages and Icons podcast, George.
Thank you for having me.
And today we're talking about the new Audible book you're doing called Neverending Present,
the story of Gord Downie and the Tragically Hip. So what does it mean to you to be the voice of this book on Audible, given that there are likely lots of people who have come to know the story of the Tragically Hip through your recording?
This is a band I care deeply about, and their impact on me and us in this country is not insignificant. So when I was first approached to do it, I took that seriously because I care deeply about them. It's not the kind of thing that I had set out to do, but I wanted to make sure that, and there are a lot of people who could have done it this way for sure, but I wanted to make sure that it was done by somebody who really did care about the band and care about the story and understood the story.
Yeah.
So that's why I did it.
So then tell us about your interactions with Gord Downie and the band over the years. Like, how did you come to know them as a fan or personally, or and also as a journalist?
You know, I met them, the first time I met them, I don't remember when it was, but it was 20 years ago at least. I think I was working at a radio station at the time, and I had interviewed the band. So they were opening up the Hershey Center in Mississauga, they were opening up the Air Canada Center. So they were doing these things, and my radio station was broadcasting from the location, and that's how I met them. So I would do an interview with them, different members of the band. I think the first time I interviewed Gord was on his solo record, the Coke Machine Glow record.
Which a song of from that album is the name of this book.
That's right.
Yeah.
Never Ending Present.
Yep. Yeah.
And yeah, I liked them. I liked the band. You know, I was getting a motorcycle license when I was a teenager, and I remember I was in a parking lot. That's where you get getting a motorcycle license at Humber College. And there was this bleach blonde girl wearing cutoff shorts and cowboy boots. And she used to throw booze can parties in the gay village in Toronto. She was the coolest girl I'd met to that point. And she was taking the motorcycle course too. And when I was a teenager, she was probably 17 as well. And we got in the car, my mother's Pontiac, and we were gonna go get lunch in between motorcycle courses. And she was going through my cassette collection of all my music in the car, and she picks up Road Apples by the Tragically Hip, and she looks at it, she goes, awesome. And that was like, oh my God, this cool girl just totally endorsed this. You know, it was one of those moments as a teenage boy where you're like, oh my. It was a really big moment. But so that's not why I like the hit with the band, but that's how far back we go with them, right? It's just like they meant something, and they were like this bar band that were more than that. There's each member of that band does their own thing. So I think coming to know them as a fan early was important. But then getting to know them as an interviewer and as a music, radio, and TV person was always fun.
The Hip never really like did any flag waving or any. They never tried to be Canada's band, but we made them a de facto Canada's band. Why do you think Canadians have embraced the band so much as like our national band?
I think the band came about at a time when Canadian identity was changing. You know, Canada, so much of Canada is tied to small town, hockey, World War II, and slightly after it, narratives. That's the Canada that we've been sold. You know, the late 80s, early 90s, Canada's changing, the culture's changing. We're getting older as a defined nation, whatever that means, or as a named nation called Canada. But I think it was just a good time. And they sounded great, and they wrote really cool songs. And they didn't write that much about Canada. That's what's really funny about the band. People think they did, but they didn't. It's like any really powerful piece of art. It almost doesn't matter what the artist meant. It's how you feel.
Oh yeah, 100%.
And Canada felt something with the Hip. I mean, think about it, a bar band.
Well, they got a couple songs, big ones that were about hot hockey references. A
couple of them, but even Fireworks.
That's all you need, I think.
Yeah, oh yeah, this is an easy country to impress if you're doing that kind of stuff. But even Fireworks, which mentions hockey, is about when a woman takes your attention away from hockey, right? Like, that's what that was about. You know, you held my hand, we walked home the long way, and you were loosening my grip on Bobby Orr. Like, that's a big moment in every kid's life where you grow up listening and watching the stuff that your parents do. And then suddenly you make your own choices. And that's what I think they were doing. The Bill Barilko story in 50 Mission Cap.
That got me interested in that, yeah.
And it's a tragedy.
Yeah.
It's a song about a tragedy, right? But they're also the band that wrote about David Milgaard, which I think is really interesting. And, you know, they need to do that kind of stuff. Or musicians needed to do that. So I think that was important. But they didn't write as much about Canada as people think. But the Hip have a poetic heart. And I think at the time, Canada was ready for a poetic heart. A new one. We had Joni, Neil, Gord, Lightfoot, So we've done it. We certainly embraced it. But it had been a minute since we had a new one.
And Downey, a good rock one.
Yeah, and Downey fit the bill. Downey fit the bill. Danny wrote the lyrics. They were kind of elusive. They played that small town thing, you know, that Canadians love en masse. And yeah, they're just special. You don't get many Gord Downies. You don't get many Tragically Hip.
I agree. For me, it was the flair. Like, I that's what drew me into it.
What do you mean, like his performance?
Yes, because I love the Talking Heads. And for me, it just reminded me kind of like our version of David Byrne almost, you know, just kind of do his own thing, dance, dress. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. No, Downey's an artist for sure. I think Gord would appreciate the art and passion that went into this book. I think the band would. I don't know. Like, I haven't talked to him about it. It's more that somebody had to tell the story. And Michael Barclay's a good writer. And this is an important band. And someone needs to tell the story. And I think it's important for the Hip to tell their own story. And I think it's important for other people to tell their own story as well. Because songs have two lives, right? There's the song you record, and then there's the song you play for the audience. Gord used to say that was the completion of a song, is when you played it. And when you play it for an audience, the song belongs to the audience now. The artist gets paid, but the song belongs to the audience. Mm-hmm. And
that's any form of artwork.
Right.
And it's no longer yours when you put it out there.
Right. And that's what I think this book is too. You know, the band exists as the band, and then the band exists as the relationship between them and us. And I think that's really important for lots of people to tell the story of the artists that have impacted them. Most of the great art that we like, we weren't around for it. We weren't around for Mozart or Beethoven. But Glenn Gould, most people didn't see Glenn Gould play, but Glenn Gould changed all of recorded music because those people talked about it. And I think it's really important for storytellers to tell stories about storytellers. And I think that that's why books like this are important.
What do you think that you bring that's a little different or surprising to this Audible book?
I'm a pretty casual fella, which you've probably figured out. Mm-hmm. And so I don't read proper, like, I'm not that guy who is sit there and talk and read the book like this. There's emotion. I had to stop myself from crying like 20 times reading this book. So I'm me. I'm just a real person who just happens to have been on the air for a long time. So, but that's it. So this book, I certainly listen to a lot of audiobooks. When I go on these road trips, I listen to audiobooks and I love it. My favorite ones are the ones where I feel like there's a real connection between the reader and the story. So I'm not in the band, I wasn't a part of the band, so I'm not connected in that way, but I am connected in that as a big fan and as somebody who's been lucky enough to be in their company and be a part of really special moments with them, I knew that I would respect the story and respect the band. And look, there's things in this book that I disagree with. And I told that to
Michael.
There's lots of stuff. And Michael and I talked about it on the street. It's just like, you know, whenever you're writing about culture and you're writing about a time, I'm not saying facts, it's not about facts. Like, when you're writing about culture and writing time, you're going to have debate because you're going to have different relationships with the story. And I know that when I read this book, I brought a really human layer to it because it's a human story. And I knew those guys, not super well, but well enough that I respected it.
Yeah. Well, you also organized the Hip 30th anniversary celebration.
We did this right here in this living room.
Because you organized this before you found out Gord was
Ill?
Oh, yeah, way before.
Yeah, way before. We were doing it just to honor the Hip's 30th anniversary, right?
How did that evolve then once you found that out?
I think what happened was it took on a different gravitas when we put it out. We reached out to a bunch of artists and said, hey, we're doing this thing to honor the band. It's really important to us and our show and me. I'm not interested in exploiting anybody or anything, ever. And I don't like getting over on somebody else's joy or pain, right? I just like connecting you with good music and great art or whatever that is, or conversation or ideas. So the Hip were reaching this 30th anniversary. I feel like a lot of people didn't really understand the impact of the Hip. I feel like when anything's been around for a long time, the audience takes it for granted. Certainly Canadians do. And they just go, oh, that's like part of the background. But I don't think people really...
You think so?
100%. 100%.
You also have to give that time. You have to give time for other bands to become inspired and musicians become inspired.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that people take things for granted. I do, but that's natural.
I think so.
100%. 100%. You see it all the time. And then when a band goes on their farewell tour, then everybody goes, oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You know, you don't know what you got till it's gone philosophy, right? And people, of course, love the Hip. But I think people... The challenge for any band is when you have a lot of hits early... is that your audience wants those songs. What people don't realize is that the stuff the Hip were doing in the second half of their career, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. It was incredible music, incredible art, incredible lyrics, the bass lines, the guitars, the drums. It was incredible. So that's what I'm saying. People don't really, people want Def Leppard to play the song from the second record or the third record, right? They don't care about the new stuff. People didn't want, you know, not that people didn't want new stuff.
You're
from
comparing
the Hip
to Def Leppard.
I'm comparing the Hip to any band that's been around a long time. Okay. If you think about it, how many bands has been around 30 years with four people? The same members for 30 years. You could count it on one hand, pretty much. Bands who've had that kind of run, right? So I think that the Hip clearly got their due, but there was more to them than just their due. And I mean, you took a look at that farewell tour. Look at what that felt like.
It's huge. I cried watching that.
Of course.
Yeah.
When was the last time you saw something like that?
I've been Canada?
Anywhere.
Actually, I don't think in my lifetime.
Me neither. I've never seen it. And when was the last time you saw a prime minister come out of the House of Commons on the day Gore passes and break down and cry? You don't see that anywhere. Like, you don't see that anywhere. For an artist, you never see that. There's something really special about the relationship the Hip had with and has with this country.
Yeah.
You know, you don't, a prime minister crying, and everybody around the country, like Trudeau or don't like Trudeau, we're like, yeah, I fucking get it.
They understood.
Yeah, absolutely. I got it. I totally got it. I cried a ton during that last show.
Do you think that Canadians were a little quiet about sharing the Hip with the rest of the world?
No, I think Canadians are pretty loud about the Hip. I do. Yeah.
I am too, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you...
That's one thing I liked about the book. You know, one of the things I really agreed with is that Canadians have this really strange mentality, which is if you don't make it in America, they don't think you didn't make... You're not a real deal. The Hip made it in America.
Yeah.
Bands would kill to have the kinds of shows that the Tragically Hip had in America. But Canadians took this weird ownership over the band. And like, the amount of interviews I've done over the years where people would ask about the Hip, it was always the conceit that the Hip didn't make it in America. Which is a very Canadian attitude.
Did people care about that? I don't think it affected how they felt about them.
Canadians have a strange, strange view of their own celebrities.
Yes, for sure. But regarding the Hip, I don't think, from my experience, I don't think people really were like, oh, therefore we must dismiss them.
No. No one ever dismissed them. No, in fact, they blamed other countries for not getting it.
You guys are stupid.
Yeah. No, nobody dismissed the Hip. The Hip made it in America. The Hip made it in America, played amazing shows in America. The Hip mattered around the world. And you could see when that last show aired, people watched it from everywhere and not just Canadians. Mm-hmm. Even people who didn't know the band who watched that final show realized they were a part of something really special. I was lucky enough to see the Secret Path shows afterwards. And those shows were unbelievable. Some of the most impactful time, you know, I've ever spent watching music. And I think that this book captured a lot of that. That's why it was so emotional to read.
So I have a Zoomer question.
Okay, what is
you
a
turned-
Zoomer question?
You turned 45 last year.
Yes.
So that means you're officially a Zoomer.
That is not true. That is
a
fake definition of what a boomer is.
Well, we invented that.
That's right.
That demo, that definition, and therefore it is true. So
I
you've worked
it.
In so many different roles in radio and TV.
I'm officially a Zoomer? So what is Zoomer? Yeah. 45 to?
45 plus.
45 plus a Zoomer. 45 till the ground.
Till the ground.
I love it. I feel like I'm 27 in my brain. Does that matter?
Well, yeah, it absolutely matters. That's exactly what we go for.
Yeah.
So you've worked in so many different roles in media and, you know, from music journalism to sports and now this Audible project. What other goals do you have in store in your career?
The thing that I dislike the most is when people say stay in your lane.
For sure. Yeah, you can tell that about you.
And I won't do it. I don't like lanes. So I hope that, you know, when I was really little, my mother used to say to me, your world is a mansion, so don't just use two rooms. So I kind of look like I want to do all kinds of things and not just in media. Like, I like being around lovely people who do lovely things. I like people who have a sense of community. I like art and shows that are connected to something bigger than just a moment. Fame isn't really anything other than an abstract, right? It's a bright light that's shone on you, and if you don't deflect it to areas that need it, you just burn up in the heat, and it's no good for anything. So I like being around.
And you won't last either.
Yeah.
If you're trying to please everybody
You can't. Yeah, you're right. It's not real, right? It's just a thing. Plus, everybody can be famous now. I was very lucky that I never got into this for profile. I got into this because I just liked the things that we spoke about or listened to or shared or ideas. So I keep going in that direction. We have a scripted business now that makes scripted things and another interview platform, because it's just about humanity. I mean, that's one of the nice things about being 45 is that you kind of look around and go, oh, who cares?
Yeah.
Like, who cares what anybody thinks? Like, who cares about anything other than be a good person, be a decent human being, do good work? Like, that's it, right? Do good work and good things follow. That's kind of where I think I've always been, but I know how to articulate it better. I've learned what my role is, and I've learned that the more I do different things, the happier I'll be, the more I surround my, not even, and happy is not important to me, vitality is important. If I live a vital life, I'm okay. You can't be happy all the time, because you are going to love people and be loved by people who will suffer, or you'll be in the world and you'll watch people suffer. And if you're happy in the face of their suffering, maybe you're not paying attention. So happiness isn't the goal for me. Vitality is the goal. So I'm always just looking for projects and people and teams to be a part of and things to do on my own where I can feel like there's a vital existence. So I didn't waste my time here. That's kind of what I want to do. And as far as the career goes, I love it because, you know, we always want to be 2 weeks ahead of our time. You know, like, what happens to media now? TV's finished in the traditional sense. Radio is pretty much finished with the exception of local talk, hyper niche.
Political online radio, podcasts and stuff.
Yeah, like, podcasts are changing, right? Like, there are 400,000 podcasts out there. Mm-hmm. Actually, funny enough, if it wasn't for Audible, who sponsors most of them, that podcast business would crater. You know, like, everything is hyper niche, which I think is kind of cool. YouTube is the best TV channel that has ever existed. And there are so many places to be if you create things. That's really exciting to me. I like being a part of it. And I feel like it's like, this is always new.
And finally, what do you hope listeners will take away from the audiobook on Audible, Never Ending Present?
It's a one-of-a-kind band. It's a one-of-a-kind band with a
Anything
one.
Anything surprising that we would learn?
I think people would be really surprised to learn about the early days and how this band came to be and the dynamic between the group. Like, staying together for all those years. I think the band will learn, too, that the Hip are more than Gord Downie. Some people know that. But Gord gets a lot. When you're the front person, you're going to get a lot of attention, understandably so. But this band is that band because of the band. You take any member of that band out, and it's not the same thing.
And also, he fed off of their energy. He fed off their music.
Gord Sinclair is one of the most badass players on the planet. Like, badass. Paul Langlois is a killer harmony guy. Killer pieces, Robbie Baker, killer. Johnny Faye kept that fucking train rolling, you know, and did it well. They are all so interesting, but together, because they've done solo stuff, right? And Gord did solo stuff, which is beautiful music. And, you know, I remember Paul Langlois came in when I used to do this show in a broom closet, came in, great stuff. All really cool stuff individually. But when you get them together, that's the special stuff. And I've been lucky enough to cover music for a long time. And that alchemy is rare. Rare. And to keep it going, rare. Rarer still. I really, really think that the story of the band is showcased in this as well, in this book. And I think people will clue into that.
And hopefully end up with a smile on their faces and not.
They will.
Tears.
Well, no, there's a lot. It's pretty emotional, for sure. Yeah, there will be, and also it's a lot of really great memories. It's a lot of really great memories. And what's cool about this book, too, is it's not just a book about the band. The way Michael got there was by including stories from a who's who of not just Canada, but around the world, musicians and artists and writers and producers. So they've got a lot of voices from this or across the spectrum that are participating in this book.
All right, George. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Hey, no, thank you for your time.
Thanks for being on Ages and Icons.
I'm happy to be a part of it.
Say hi to Mike.
Hello, Mike.
Hey, George. Sorry I couldn't be there. We'll be there next time.
Yeah.
I want to try this vegan cheeseburger, too. You've got me sort of craving it now, even though I'm not vegan.
I'll tell you about it. I would plug them, but I can't even remember the name of the place. I'll have to look it up. So that was my interview with George. How did I do, Mike?
I think you are... I can't talk.
See, Mike is... Mike, is that jealousy? Is it because I might take over your interviewing? No, you are the master, Mike. I just try.
No. I will say this, and honestly, as from what we do, and we sit down, we interview different people. It is very difficult to sit in a room with somebody who you have not prepared to interview and be given questions written by somebody else, and then do the interview confidently. So that is. All you. That is all to your credit.
And I just added like one or two, so...
And on top of it, adding your own, which is amazing.
You know, as the conversation goes,
Absolutely.
I'm a conversationalist, but I had to stick to the topics, that we were there to talk about. But I do love Gord Downie so much and miss him. And I also liked when he talked about how difficult it must be for a band who's had some huge hits right out the gate, early on in their career, with Road Apples and Fully Completely being very early albums, and then the fact that they released such incredible music at the end, George feels that it was kind of ignored by most of the country, most of people that claim to be fans.
Yeah.
But not by me. I actually love their later stuff. So, I highly recommend it.
Well,
later stuff if you are a fan of the hip, especially maybe you just know the earlier stuff. Get into their later albums because they're incredible.
Yeah, and it's an evolution of a band, right? And that happens with a lot of artists. And I mean, for example, I'm a big Elton John fan, but if you listen to something he released a couple years ago, A Wonderful Crazy Night, it's very different than his early albums. So it's to be expected. But the hip. Their popularity, at the end, it's not like everybody's like, oh, yeah, the Tragically Hip. That's right. That band. Oh, they're stopping touring. So they were on top of the top of the heap.
Right.
And went out on top, which is incredible. And we don't always get to say goodbye to our heroes and our favorite artists before they're gone for good. Sometimes it's sudden and we don't get that chance. So what a gift to Canada and to the band to be able to do that. Now, obviously, the inevitable question, do you have a favorite hip song?
A live version, this is my number one favorite, Locked in the Trunk of a Car, because I have a story behind it, and this is why I love it so much. I actually was in a trunk of a car when I heard the song for the first time. I was 14, and my sister was sneaking me into the drive-in theater on Highway 7. It's no longer there. And she was sneaking me in because she had too many people in the car. And they wouldn't let us in. I repeat, I was 14, I think, or 15. And I went in the car, and they weren't supposed to close. It was one of those cars where you can actually get through the trunk, through the back seat. Okay, so this is an old Chevrolet, like an 87 Chevrolet. A little one, a little small compact one. And so my sister's friends are all in the car, and everyone's in the car. It's just packed. And I'm in the trunk. And they were leaving the seat open, Mike, a little bit, right?
So you could breathe.
So I could breathe.
Yeah.
And I could be in conversation with them and not feel so claustrophobic. Okay. Soon as we get up to the guy, or maybe one car before we're about to get up to the part where you go into the drive-in theater and you pay, someone closes the seat. I don't know who it was, but they closed the seat. And Mike, I swear to God, I swear. Locked in the Trunk of the Car came on, and the speakers are in the trunk of the car or in the back or wherever. I could hear it so clearly. And I flipped out. And and it was the best. And I was trying to keep calm because I didn't know if he was there. And I think I made it through maybe 3 minutes or 4 minutes. And Gord starts improvising about, get me out of here. And I lost it. And I started kicking and punching the car. They had to pull over because obviously the guy outside could hear me.
Yeah.
But I couldn't hear anybody. And I just lost my mind. Long story short, I snuck back in through when we pulled over. And the guy thought he was crazy because he saw nobody get out of the car.
Yeah.
And it was me. I went back through. They got me in. They opened it up. They go, get in. And they pulled me in and into the car. So
that's hilarious.
I know. Yeah, so I love that. That's why I love that song and always will.
What are the chances, eh?
And I used to go in the winter. I'm a huge drive-in fan. But drive-ins were theaters outdoors, kids. Yeah. Just so you know.
My favorite hip song, it was kind of cliche, but it's Bob Cajun because...
That's the best.
My grandparents lived in Bob Cajun for many years, mm-hmm. and I would go up there. It's always been in my life, my happy place. Not that I had a terrible life, but I had a wonderful life, but it was even more wonderful there. And... I couldn't believe that there was, because when I was a kid, nobody ever heard of this. At least people that I knew, friends and family, say, "Where are you going to visit your grandparents, Bob? What? You know, they never knew." And so then all of a sudden, there's this song called Bob Cajun, mm-hmm. and everybody's heard of it. And it always amazed me that this quiet, wonderful little town could be the subject of a hip song that is now one of the most popular hip songs. So I know it's kind of cliche to say that you like that hip song, but
it's the best.
There's a reason.
That's great. So the book is on Audible. It's called Neverending Present, narrated, read by, as George says, casually read by George Strombolopoulos. George, thanks again for the interview. Michael Barclay for writing the book. Apparently it's an incredible backstory about the hip and all the members of the hip and their struggles and their story, and hope you get a chance to check it out. And again, you can find this podcast, Ages and Icons, on everythingzoomer.com, as well as iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you find your podcasts.
And thank you to you as well, Gina, for filling in, being the superhero, and doing the interview on such short notice. I really appreciate it. And thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time on Ages and Icons.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.